Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Join us this Saturday for an all-new episode of The Athletic NBA Show, Saturday Slammin' Jam, hosted by me, Andrew Schlecht. I'll be joined by my co-hosts Alex Spears and many of the Athletic beat writers that you know and love. We will recap the week of the NBA, play some NBA trivia, and just overall talk about the league that we love most. So while you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee on Saturday morning, listen to Saturday Slammin' Jam on the Athletic NBA Show.
Yo, it's Zach Harper, host of the Basketball Buds, right here on the Athletic NBA Show. Join me and the fellas, Waz, Trey, Jay, and Dave, for a new episode every Monday morning. What's Jay King going to say that lights the podcast on fire? What's that problematic envelope that Waz is going to keep pushing? Every single Monday, tune in to find out. That's every Monday morning right here on the Athletic NBA Show.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday,
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Coming up on today's show, we talk about veteranosity and introduce the NBA Circle of Life.
This is Nerdish, She Wrote, with your host, Dave Dufour.
With Mo DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Partnow.
And welcome to the Athletic NBA Show. It's Friday. I'm Dave Dufour, and that means it's Nerder, She Wrote. Mo and Seth are here. What's up, guys?
What's up, Dave? How are we doing?
It's the last show I've got before vacation next week, and I don't know. I was thinking about mailing this one in. What do you think?
Senioritis already.
Yeah, I don't know.
Don't you mail them all in?
Well, there's a lot of teams mailing some games in now, so you're right there with the rest of the league right now.
Dave's on the 1-2-3 Cancun plan.
Yeah, I'm playing some first quarter defense right now for sure. Carl Anthony Towns need not apply here. I definitely am doing a worse job. All right, so there's a lot of weird stuff happening right now. And one of the things that we've kind of harped on for a while is that teams really, when they're going for titles, they tend to, I think, miss the trees for the forest sometimes, but I don't know if they're looking at a green forest. It might be a dead forest. The forest could be on fire. And what I'm saying is when they go and buy saying? Out or they go and shop on the buyout market, they go and shop on the buyout market and they get players who aren't as good as some of the younger options that they already have on the roster. And of course, you know, I'm talking about the Nets because they signed everybody who was on the buyout market. And I just don't think LaMarcus Aldridge is the answer to what ails them, guys.
Yeah. This team did not need more shot creation. This team needed defense. This team needed switchability. This team needed mobility from a big man in the playoffs. And that's not 35-year-old LaMarcus Aldridge. And he's had a couple decent games since he's been back. But, like, him doing well in a April 7th game against the Pelicans, that's not where Brooklyn is winning or losing the title. That's not it.
Yeah, no, beating up on Charlotte, Chicago, New York, and the Pelicans, it's like, okay. I mean, it's I get the pushback with that. And also, Blake Griffin has looked good. I got to eat a little bit on that because I didn't think he would look this good coming back and after what we had seen in Detroit. Maybe they have the Fountain of Youth in Brooklyn. I don't know. We should ask Trey to go check that out. But I'm with you on Seth with this in the sense of, like, they have guys on their roster that need to play that I think can help them. You know, and maybe there's a fear of they're young and things like that. I think there's a lot in play in this situation. Steve Nash is trying to figure out what he has in guys, you know, and what he can go to. But it's just so weird, especially because we don't even know their rotation because we haven't even seen them fully healthy yet.
Well, my expectation is it's going to be a short rotation. I'm assuming the D'Antoni rules are going to apply, and they're going to be at eight guys, maybe nine. But their big man rotation, it's odd. And the guy who really needs to play, Nicholas Claxton, the second-year player, he happens to be the odd man out. He also happens to be, to me, their best option defensively, at least their most versatile option. Maybe he doesn't match up well against Joel Embiid or Nikola Jokic, but he certainly matches up well against most of the other teams that they're going to face in potential playoff matchups, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, Claxton does such a great job showing that he can switch. Now, you know, the one thing I would say is there is the question of the unknown of how the playoffs and the pressure of the playoffs will affect Claxton going in. But, you know, he is their best big man. I mean, they've put DeAndre Jordan to the bench. You know, he hasn't played, I think, since the 31st. They kind of figuring out the rotations, but Claxton's minutes have gone down, and it's because they're trying to figure out how to play Blake, how to play Aldridge and all of this. And then when KD comes back, and who is back, I'm sorry, now, and when they get James Harden back, now it's about figuring out that whole rotation. And it's like, well, what are you going to do? Like, this is going to be a very interesting scenario to see how this plays out for the Nets, because I'm fascinated, Dave, by what this rotation is going to look like when they're healthy. Because are they going to even prioritize defense?
Well, they may not have to, right? And this is the thing, and this is where I know this is the show that splits hairs, and we're certainly splitting hairs here, but because it may not matter. It may not matter at all. They may have enough defense with the guys that they have out there because of the offense. Well, but I have to think that Claxton is going to be – he is going to play a role in a potential series against Philly and against Milwaukee in particular. Those two teams come to mind immediately for Claxton.
Oh, I would think if Miami gets their Miami stuff together too. I mean, yeah. I think that he's like his ability to switch and move against like a team that does like heavy DHO action would be a good club to have in the bag. If you're going to be an optimist, I think the one thing you say is you talk about them having enough offense, like with only one of their kind of stars available. Maybe you think, okay, we need some of even though Aldridge's shot creation at this point in his career is mediocre, we have 70 million in shot creators on the bench over there with, you know, hamstring injuries or whatever. So maybe we need that to lean on that a little bit more. And maybe as you can put all three guys back on the floor, maybe, okay, we can balance this lineup with a roller, a screener, a defensive chaser who doesn't need the ball. Cause I do worry, like, if they have all three of their main guys healthy and Aldridge is in the game, he's taking shots that are coming out of one of their pockets. And there's no scenario in which I'm going to prefer a LaMarcus Aldridge mid-ranger to anything those other three guys are going to do. So you're kind of getting the worst of both worlds in that circumstance. But as of right now, when they don't have all that available, maybe it is more useful.
Yeah, and it works now, and this is kind of why I'm coming back to the we don't even know what they look like fully healthy, because that's the important thing is they all need to get on the court together so they can figure this out. So Aldridge can go, or they can say to LaMarcus, yo, we don't need that shot. You know, like, that's not a shot we want you to take, or things like that. When we have these three guys on the court with you, that ain't really your game, and trying to figure all of that out. But that only works when you have everybody on the court and can start figuring it out. Like, you know, this is the thing. Like, it's great that they've been killing it with at least one guy on the bench, you know, and not in uniform. And it's been awesome when they've been able to do it when it was just James Harden. But they're going to need to know what it looks like. I mean, I think they've played, only seven or eight games fully healthy, and that was before all of these signings and all of these guys kind of coming in. They're going to need to know what this looks like when they go in. So at least Steve Nash knows what he can turn to in the playoffs. They're going to be, at this point, it really feels like they're going to be just experimenting in the playoffs and hoping it works.
Now, this is not only happening with the Brooklyn Nets, though. So it's not just teams that are gunning for a title. I mean, Mo, we talked already this week, I think twice, about the fact that Elfrid Payton is still starting for the Knicks, and he clearly is not the drink stirrer that Emmanuel Quickley is. And now, maybe it's again, we know Tom Thibodeau is going to rely on veterans and they want to make the playoffs and they're pretty close to it. And maybe you're just scared to make a change, but it feels to me like you know, maybe you're limiting your ceiling a little bit because Quickley needs a chance, not just for this year, but going forward. That you need to know if that guy's going to be a piece.
For me, from I've watched a ton of Knicks. For me, Quickley is not a starting point guard. Like in this, he is a high level backup. Like that's the role he's in now is good. Now I'd like to see him get more minutes, and sure, that was kind of our concern when they traded for Derrick Rose and things like that. That's something that's a bit of a concern. But I don't think he's a starting level point guard for a good team in the NBA. If he's your starter, you're not really heading in the right direction. He's a good player. I'm not trying to trash him. It's just that's just not who he is. I think he's going to be a great off the bench backup point guard in this league for a long time.
I agree with Mo for the most part. I mean, I think if he is your fifth starter and you have one of these star ball handling, drink stirring wings, then he can sort of, fit into that. I don't even want to make this comparison because I think it's if he gets to be this level as a player, he'll have done very well. But that George Hill kind of role of the guy who can play on the ball, off the ball, stick jumpers, play defense, like that's sort of the bestest case, not a word, scenario for what you hope he can be. And on one hand, like, don't want to throw too much of Adam as a rookie. On the other hand, I agree with Mo. You do kind of, or do agree with you, Dave. You do want to see what he's got, and you know what Elfrid Payton does and doesn't have is more of the right issue there. It's not so much you want to give more to Quickley. It's just like, okay, fine, but why this other guy? Why this, like, okay, we know the level this guy, we can count on the level this guy's going to be at. We just know that level is mediocre. But there does tend to be a preference for that, like the sureness of that mediocrity over the variability of a young player with potential in many situations. Well,
I think it's different with the Knicks because of they're in a situation I don't think any of us were expecting.
I agree.
Like they are going to be in the playoffs. At the very least, the play-in tournament. You know, like this is something I thought they were going to be one of the worst teams in the league this year. So, you know, I think there's a little bit of that. I think Payton, as much as they know exactly what they're going to get out of it. And I think that's a valuable thing as a coach. That's something you want to know,
right?
You know, going in the game, I'm going to get this from him. And it's mediocre. He's a terrible shooter. He's not even that great finishing at the rim and stuff, but he's pretty tough as a defender, pretty physical. Like he does a pretty good job there. And I think it's something that for Thibodeau, it's like, I know what I'm going to get there. When I put Quickley in, sometimes it's great, sometimes it's bad. I have no idea on a day-to-day thing. He can come in going like, man, I was so awesome in my warmups. I'm ready to go. And then completely put up a dud. And the other way around, be terrible in warmups and then come up and kill it. Like it's still trying to figure it out. So it's a trust thing in that sense for the Knicks. And so I'm not too concerned about it because I think the Knicks know what they have in Quickley. And I think they've kind of found the role for him and they're getting him used to that.
Yeah.
I know. I was going to say, I know why coaches do it. I just don't like it. But
Well, Robert Williams.
I mean,
We were talking about Robert Williams in Boston all year. It's the ceiling versus the floor. The floor guys, the Daniel Tice, the Tristan Thompsons, even, that consistent floor. Elfrid Payton. I know that I'm getting this minimum amount. And Robert Williams, as an example, may not hit that night in, night out, but he also has the potential to, launch into orbit as well. And I think that the making the conscious choice where you go in knowing my potential ceiling is lower here because I'm making the safe choice, it does bug me a little bit.
Well, you don't win championships with the safe choice. It comes down to that.
Draymond Green,
you
right?
Like you no
playing five.
I think of things in statistical terms. You need to hit the right tail of a distribution to win a chance. Like you're going to have to get something's going to have to work out well for you. So if you need something to work out well, why not be the thing that you need to work out well? If it works out well, it works out really well. Instead of like, Elfrid Payton had 12-7 tonight. We got this 95% of what he could possibly give us. Great.
No, but it's interesting, Dave, that you brought up Draymond Green because that wasn't a real – it wasn't like, we're playing him over this guy. It was a necessity. and then they saw what they have. It was kind of a fluke thing for them, right? You know, yeah, exactly. It's like when I look into one of my pockets of my pants that I haven't worn for a year and a half and find $20 in there. That's a win for me. You know, like that's shocking. Of course, I go through all my other pants and don't find $20 and I'm pissed off, but that's a different story for another day. The idea is they stumbled upon it and lucked into it. You know, this is something that might happen for other teams. You know, when you look at the Robert Williams situation, he earned this, you know, from what he was doing in practice. I think we all saw it coming in the long run. I think they saw it coming in the long run, but how the season was going, he has taken a leap in the sense of they felt comfortable enough. So I don't really want to knock them.
I think there was some fortune there because they trade Tice thinking that they're going to get Andre Drummond as on a buyout. And then that doesn't come through. And then Thompson is out. And so you have to start Robert Williams. And even before he starts his first game, Brad Stevens is like, he has a quote. He had some quote about, well, we think Robert Williams is more comfortable playing off the bench. Robert Williams comes in and double doubles all over everybody. He's like, actually, Robert Williams looks pretty comfortable as a starter. And just like, okay, you didn't want to do this. It's, you know, this came up today with, or we're recording on Thursday, came up today with the news that Orlando is waiving Kem Birch so that they have to play Mo Bamba. And it's the money ball. You can do whatever, coach, you can do whatever you want with your team. You just can't start Peña at first base because I just traded him. And there's something to be said for that. If there's a guy you need to see what you have, coaches are going to, as you say, are going to go for the sure thing more than they're going to gamble on the upside. And trying to get where the teams want to go, you at least need to know about that upside a little bit more. And I recognize it's a tough balance because, you know, the GM isn't getting fired for you losing with the young guy. So,
right. I totally get it as a coach. I totally get it. Consistency is important. And it's important not just for the team, but it's important for other young players. I would argue Elfrid Payton being able to give you 12 and 4 assists and 4 rebounds has been good for RJ Barrett and probably good for Julius Randle. And just knowing that you have a guy out there who, you know, has been on the court before, right? An adult. And I understand that completely. But at the same time, you talk about Emmanuel Quickley being a guy who would be perfect as like the third ball handler. I look at RJ Barrett and Julius Randle and I say, seems like Quickley fits pretty nicely next to those guys. And I'd like to see a lot more of it. But, you know, I'm splitting hairs here because they probably are not as good night in, night out if Quickley's the starter. But I bet that the nights that are good are better than they are now. That's kind of my Quickley thesis.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Okay, so we wanted to introduce a new idea. And it's really, I mean, you know, it's a new way to talk about an old idea. Shall we say, and we were talking about the life cycle of NBA teams, the NBA circle of life, so to speak. Every team is born, every team learns to crawl and then walk, and then if they're lucky, run, maybe win a championship, and eventually Father Time and Lady Death sneak up and catch every single franchise. And ladies and gentlemen, here's how it works. You have the reincarnation phase. That's the, hey, you know what? We've decided it's not working with these guys. Maybe the young, promising players that we had 5 years ago, none of them turned out to be foundational talents. Time to move on. We got to bottom out again. Then you have the lottery phase. That's where you're collecting assets. You're taking on bad contracts. You wind up giving player bonuses because you're not hitting the salary floor. It's a very cheap place to be. And you control the NBA draft if you're located in the state of Oklahoma. Then we have the Star is Born phase. You get that number one pick, or maybe you get the, you know, number five pick, and you trade up, and you're able, you know, to get a star. A star is born. It's a great place to be. Now you can build around this star. Maybe you make the playoffs because your star is that good. You're trying to get a third star or a second star if you don't have it. Then it's the arrival stage, and that's where you've got a star who maybe is an MVP caliber talent. Maybe you've got two other budding stars, a budding big three, if you will. You've made the playoffs a few years in a row, made a conference finals, ready to start making a push to the finals. Then you have the current champion phase, non-dynasty edition. That's, you know, the Lakers. Not a real time crunch yet, not a real money crunch. You're still favored to win the title. And then you have the last phase, and for us, it's going to be the first phase. The one foot in the grave phase, and that is you have been priced out, aged out, injured out, traded out, free agency'd out. Your organization has spent years prioritizing winning over development and asset collection. You've had years of late draft picks, and I've just described the Golden State Warriors and the Toronto Raptors. So, gentlemen, here we are, one foot in the grave. The Warriors and Raptors. We got to start with the Warriors because they're just a really weird team right now. They've got Steph Curry, who is still just absolutely incredible. Draymond Green on the nights where he's Draymond, I mean, he's still there. And the Klay Thompson injury on draft day completely ruined the season for them. So they're in a tough spot. What do you think about the Warriors right now, Mo? I mean, it's when it's good, it's good. You know, we saw them beat the Bucks the other night. They look great. But when it's bad, oof, it's a mess.
Yeah, no, this just isn't a very good team. And even last year, you know, when we were going into it and people were, I think somebody on this podcast was one of the bald gentlemen on this podcast. You're not bald, Seth. Was picking them to go to the finals. So I think that's kind of the it's like, no, they just weren't good. Even if Klay came back, they just didn't have defense. They didn't have the guys. They've not had a great bench for a long time. They haven't had a lot of great shooting. For as much as we talk about the Warriors as a good shooting team, there's just not a lot of great shooters on that team. And this is just what happens. You know, you go to five straight finals. You know, this is the kind of stuff that tends to happen in this scenario for you. And, you know, it's unfortunate. I mean, Curry's been phenomenal, but it's only Curry. Like, when he's not in the game, it's barely watchable.
Well, it's why we split hairs over rotational decisions. Because, like, Steph Curry sitting until the 6-minute mark or the 5-minute and 45-second mark remaining in the fourth quarter when, you know, they maybe were within 1-2 minutes before. I mean, these sorts of hair splitting, it's happened every single night with the rotations for this team. And it's because Steph Curry is the only real good player.
Yeah, if those are the hairs you're splitting, though, it's you've already lost. And this is the system in some ways working as intended. You know, there are ways to kind of stave off the tax man by, you know, with, you know, bird rights and various other exceptions, stuff like that. Eventually, though, like, retaining your guys just doesn't happen anymore. Someone decides they want to be somewhere else. Sean Livingston ages out of, you know, into retirement. Andre Iguodala is, you have to move him along to kind of hopefully start your rebuild. And what was already, by the 2019 finals, what was already a very kind of thin, hollow team, because they'd been doing so much to maximize their top 5, 6, 7 guys, that starts to go away a little bit, and there's nothing coming up behind them, and now you're starting over again, and that's natural, that's normal, that's what happens. I mean, there's this notion that somehow they're wasting Steph Curry. That's nonsense. You got what you paid for. Like, you went to the finals 5 straight years. And now this is just like, this is your hanging out at the restaurant paying the bill now. It doesn't mean the meal wasn't good because I don't have filet mignon anymore. It's garbage, you know?
Yeah. No, now it's like, some awful kind of pudding that you make with water. It's not good. It's gross.
Yeah, and some of it's just that was very disgusting.
Yeah, Dave. Pudding made with water is disgusting.
You threw me completely off.
Yeah,
with that.
It's the worst thing I can think of in the moment
in my head. But this is also the product of, you know, not developing your young guys, missing on guys that were in your program or late first round, second round picks and things like that. And every team has this. This isn't just a Warriors issue and things like that. But like when you're competing at the high level that they are, you know, it's you aren't playing the rookie. You're not playing Alfonso McKinney tons of minutes to get him experience and things like that. I think that's kind of the issue. And I think that's sort of what's happened to this Warriors team is they've just kind of run their course into who they are. And now they're trying to figure out where they're at. You know, they have James Wiseman, who's, you know, I still think going to be a pretty good big guy in the league. I don't know how good, but pretty good. I don't think he's going to be great, but they have a piece there that they're hoping they can bridge. They have, you know, this Minnesota pick that's, if it conveys to them this year, going to be a 5, 6, 7, 8 in the lottery. I think they're going to be in an interesting spot to add another young, talented guy to this team. But it's trying to figure out really where you're going now, because I don't have them, even if Klay comes back, even when Klay comes back next season, I don't have them as a championship level team. I just don't see it anymore.
I mean, I agree with
that. Not particularly close either. It's not, they're not one piece away. They're,
right.
You know, they've got Steph, who's still like legitimately playing at an MVP level. The league is at a point now where it is no longer, you know, it's no longer 2007 where, you know, you can have LeBron and he can single-handedly basically get you to the finals. The league is too competitive. You know, teams are putting too many good players on the floor now for you to really, for that mode to operate as anything more than, frisky. We don't want to play them because, you know, this one guy might get hot and beat us 2 or 3 times. And then who knows what happens? But that's really, even with like a mostly himself version of Klay, that's where this franchise is. And again, that's the, like, you know, we're calling this a circle of life. This is, you know, they had the night and now it's time to go home.
They lived a good life. They lived a good life, guys.
Yeah.
They went to 5 finals, won 3 championships, two MVPs. One of them was a unanimous MVP. They lived a good life. Let's celebrate them.
Are we putting them down? Is that where we're at?
Just think about, like,
I feel like I'm taking my dog to the vet.
I thought they should have before the season. Like when, like it's difficult because it happened on draft morning, but Klay blows out his Achilles. You have to make the, okay, we're done. It's just, I said this at the time when they traded for Oubre, like you appreciate the willingness to, you know, of ownership to spend what's a ton of money factoring the luxury tax. But you're throwing good money after bad there. And probably like to some degree hamstringing some of those other things. Like focus on development because, hey, we think we're still going for this when that's not – this is a tough decision to make for a competitive people who rise to positions of power in professional sports. But it's just not going to happen. And you have to at a certain point. So like, shit, we got unlucky.
Yeah.
In some ways, it's a similar decision to what Orlando had to make. They, you know, like, hey, we never really got to see our young core on the floor together. Well, we're never going to see our young floor on the core on the floor together because, you know, Fournier is going to leave in free agent and Aaron Gordon wants out. And who knows when these other guys are getting back on the floor. So it's not – the decision wasn't made for us, but we have to decide. Okay, well, we have to – we would have liked to have seen, you know, like the – what's the line from Hunt for Red October? I would have liked to have seen Montana. And that's right. Sort of where Orlando ended up.
A lot of movie references.
I will say, I feel a little unfair including Toronto in this because I think they have some good young talent. And I mean, Fred VanVleet is awesome. And I include them in this solely because, you know, there's the whole passing of the torch thing when Lowry leaves. I think that's more of a transition than a death. But I just included them just for argument's sake. We're really focused on the Warriors here. What do they
do? But hold on. Okay, go ahead. But even just real quick with Toronto, just it could be a quick phase.
Right.
Right. Like, it could be a quick run through the circle. You can advance through things quickly in that sense because of what they have. But the iteration of the Raptors, you know, when assuming Kyle Lowry leaves in free agency, this ain't really the same Raptors team anymore.
Even if he stays, that's a team that's still, I mean, really like 30, like what's he getting? He's getting 36 next year. Do I have that right? Like,
yeah.
Like, yeah. 36-year-old, like, as one of your main guys, and then you're still kind of hanging on with your fingernails. And yeah, the Raptors are better than their record this season. But even as good as they, if their record reflected their play, they're still not in like that top three-ish. And they're probably not on the same, even on the level as a healthy Miami, as far as like a competitor in the East this year. And so at a certain point, you do have to, you know, there is some rebooting that has to be done. Now, whether it's a retooling or a rebuilding, like that's specific to your situation, I think.
But they've done the thing that the Warriors haven't done, and they have hit on a lot of the draft picks. And I mean, they got Chris Boucher from the Warriors, you know? And so that's where I think I actually like the Raptors' outlook more than the Warriors, for sure. But they have a similar decision to make with like a franchise icon. And now I don't think the Warriors are going to trade Steph Curry. I just don't see it happening. But, you know, you have to decide, you have to make a decision. And I don't think you can keep Wiseman on this team next season and still have Steph Curry and Clay and Draymond and say that you're going to try to win a championship,
I mean, right? That Timberwolves pick lands fourth and conveys and they get like, you know, they get, you know, Jalen Suggs or Kuminga or Jalen Green or something like that, and that guy hits, then that boosts you right away into kind of a new situation. I mean, I think that, you know, LaMelo has certainly surpassed a lot of expectations from this year's draft. Warriors could have had him, but I think
we're going to name all the players. No,
I think it's still like, you know, this coming draft, I think you do have a better, you do feel like if you're anywhere in the top five, you probably have better shots at like tentpole upside than you had in this past draft.
Well, a legitimate bridge player is what they're missing. Like if Wiseman had come in and had been like Luka or maybe LaMelo or Zion, then okay, we're talking completely differently, but you know, and that's obviously unfair expectations of any player. But it was just obvious that, you know, Wiseman had played how many games at Memphis? Was it five?
Three.
And really didn't play a whole lot before. I mean, it's just like this guy is going to be a couple years before he knows what he's doing. And he's shown flashes. I'm with Mo. I think he's going to wind up being pretty good. I like the mistakes he makes even. It's just that they're in a different phase.
But I'm not ready to trade him yet. Like unless you have a package that makes you like, well, because you were just saying, like, I don't know if you could have him on this team next year with those guys. No, you definitely can, because there's going to be opportunities to grow in that. I mean, we also have to look in the fact of the guy didn't have a regular offseason, you know, didn't have a regular road, you know, didn't have a chance to get in summer league, get a training camp, work with the team all summer and things like that. I think, and part of that isn't just Wiseman getting better. Part of that is the staff knowing what he can do, you know, especially in his case, because he played so little in college and it was so, he was really kind of an unknown. So, you know, I still think, you know, it's kind of what we were talking about with the Nets sort of experimenting. I think they're kind of experimenting. Unfortunately, their experimentations had to come in the regular season because there was no way to see what he could do until he got on the court, and there was just no summer league with everything that went on. So I think they're in that a tough spot. I think it'll work out fine, you know, and I know Warriors fans are extremely upset about the minutes he's getting and not getting and so on and stuff. But also, we're not in practice.
Calm down. I just want to say, Warriors fans, calm down. You went to five. I'm not telling you to calm down. You went to five straight finals. Like,
oh, spoiled. Chill. It's spoiled. They're acting spoiled.
Like,
oh, no. I don't know, guys. I kind of like the expectation of excellence.
Come on, Dave.
I fully support it.
No, the expectation of rings or bust is fine.
It doesn't have to be rings or bust.
No, it's the expectations of Warriors exceptionalism, which is nonsense. Like, that's where you get yourself in trouble. Now, it's like, well, because we're the Warriors,
I'm going to defend Warriors fans.
No.
This is, yeah, we're going to get aggregated because I'm defending Warriors fans here. And I'm telling you, I think that if it was just a normal bad season, right? Or if they were the, I don't know, the eighth seed and they look like competent, they were just getting beat because they don't have talent. That's one thing. But there are a lot of times where there are head scratching moves. You know, saying you're committing to Wiseman and his development and we're going to start him and all this stuff. And then he, you know, he's got sporadic minutes. I think that matters. I mean, Mo, we talk all the time about the importance of consistency for young guys in particular. But you, I don't think this team, like right now, they're the 10th seed as we record. So they're in the play-in. What purpose does that serve? Anyone?
What should they be doing?
I think you need to pick one or the other. Either play Kevon Looney and try to win games. Or say, hey, all right, this is a development year. And Steph, hey, light it up while you're out there, but we're going to put you on a minutes limit. And, you know, if we win games, it's great. But if we don't, all right. And I mean, I know that's kind of what they're saying publicly, but pick one.
No, they did that. They did that last season and went through all of this in that sense, Dave. Like, I think you can do both. I think you can play him and try to win games. But here's the other thing too, though, like when we're talking about Wiseman in this sense. Exactly. Have we seen anything? Right. But have we seen anything from Wiseman where it's like, dude, this guy's so freaking amazing. He hasn't shot the ball well from like we saw a couple. He made a couple of threes to start the season and everybody went ballistic. And now he's like, I don't know when the last time was he made it a shot. Like we're putting this whole expectations on this thing where it's kind of just bullshit. And I think it's rubbish. Like I'm not losing my shit when he's not getting those minutes because it's like, look, he just probably hasn't earned them. We don't know what he's done in practice. We don't know what he's what they're seeing and what they're working on. We don't necessarily know what his work ethic is and all of those things. And it is a bit of a different year because there isn't as much practice. So I just think it's kind of one of those things. But as Seth just said, they're not that good. We knew this going into the season when we looked at their roster. We're like, damn, Steph has to go off every night for them to get wins. It didn't matter. Like nobody was expecting Wiseman to be a world beater.
And the fact that they somehow feel like they need him to be for them to get to the play-in game. I mean, it's like,
what would you guys do? What would you do for the rest of the season if you were Steve Kerr and that entire organization? What would your focus be? I mean, again, I just don't think making the play-in does you any good.
No,
you can't tank.
No, because the fans are pissed. They've had a pretty snake bit. Like, if you think about it, like,
yeah,
considering like that, you know, again, you're okay. We're going to come back and we're going to play the way that we wanted to play because we've got these three guys who have played together so much and they're going to play off each other and we can play this beautiful read and react system. And then it's over before it starts. And in a season where you don't have like the normal, like, you know, preseason open gym, you don't have a regular training camp, you have games scrunched close together. You've got guys in and out of the lineup all the time for, you know, COVID, and they've had tons of other injuries. So like, you know, you would like to have seen there be more flexibility. They've talked about, you know, it's one of those funny things that like actually by being more, a more rigid system would actually simplify it and make it easier for Wiseman, who doesn't have a lot of reps and just playing basketball in recent years, to play kind of a read and react game. Like that would make it easier for him. But when do you do that? Like you'd want that them to have done more towards that, but it's not like you just snap your fingers and say, oh, well now we're running, you know, these very intricate, like, you know, stack pick and rolls that we've never practiced. And all of a sudden, like, you know, all of our, you know, notoriously quick uptick players like Andrew Wiggins and Kelly Oubre are going to just on the fly, like, know how to do this. So, you know.
Also, don't forget Wiseman and Draymond. Remember, they started the season on the health and safety protocol list. So Wiseman didn't even get the abbreviated training camp. Right. So look, I fully, you guys are not, you're arguing with the messenger here. I fully respect the fact that they've had a rough season. But I think you're at a position right now where 6 weeks left to go. What are you playing for? Are you playing for next year, you know, 2 years from now, whatever? Or are you still, you know, trying to make the eighth seed?
I disagree with you, though, in the sense of like there's no value in them playing in the play-in tournament. Like, they're good enough that they can win those two games and get into the playoffs. And there's value in that. Like, I don't, when people say like, oh, getting into the A seed and getting your ass kicked, you know, it's not worth it. There is a value for those young guys to understand that, wow, when I get into the playoffs, this team I'm playing against knows every move I'm going to make because they've scouted the hell out of me. It is so different than the regular season. The referees aren't going to call it. Like, you don't know that till you've gone through it. And it's that simple in the sense of like, there is value for that, for those guys and being in that elevated environment, being scouted against at that level. So, you know, I think that's a goal, is you got to go try to win games. And for them, here's the beauty of it. They still might get a lottery pick from Minnesota out of this. So it's not even like it's not even like, okay, we're really hurting our chances to get better. Their chances of getting better is they need Minnesota to win a few more games just to make sure they don't get the one pick or get out of that range of one through three. Like, you know, they're in that mix. That's their concern.
Those flattened lottery odds are going to help Golden State out a lot. I was looking at tankathon.com right now with Golden State's current position. They have a less than just under 5% chance of their own pick being a top four pick. So there is a, you know, maybe they just hang out where they are and they get some lottery luck. But worst case scenario, they miss the playoffs or the play-in or whatever. They still wind up with a lottery pick from themselves and potentially the one from Minnesota. So you're right. Like, they're not in the worst position. It's just, it's hard to watch.
If they win the lottery, they just better hope Cade Cunningham isn't weird in his interviews.
Well, I mean, you know, it's all about who you want to go out to dinner with. All right, guys, we're at the end of the show. Mo, what are you looking ahead to?
Man, it's just trying to kind of see what the rotations are going to look like for the Nets as if they ever get healthy. Like, I just kind of keeping an eye on that, watching KD come back. It was fun the other night, you know, comes in 17 points in 19 minutes, but just seeing how that kind of progresses and what the Nets are slowly building to.
Seth?
I wrote about this earlier this week. We're seeing a lot of blowouts that are resembling kind of the late season stuff that we see in a normal season. And it's, you know, this the time in the calendar when we see that, where teams are shutting guys down, and but there's 6 weeks left in the season. So I'm hoping that that's like, you know, last weekend we saw 4 40-point blowouts and a 37-point blowout across Friday and Saturday. I'm hoping that that was just one of those things that happened, and that's not what the rest of the regular season looks like, because it's going to feel weird, you know, with the tournament ending and now the Masters this weekend, and it's like, okay, well, now it's the playoffs should start soon, and then we've got a whole nother month. And so, just as weird as this season has been, this is going to be another kind of, you know, sort of odd body clock thing for people to deal with, and just seeing how that's managed.
Yeah. It is weird. And part of that weirdness has led me into what I'm looking at right now. I'm actually starting to think about the draft, because I think this is going to be a draft that's important for maybe the next 10 or 15 years of the league. So I'm trying to get a head start on where I normally am around draft time and trying to, you know, crunch in the last 2 weeks, because we're kind of at a dead part of the NBA season. So I'm trying to take advantage. Also, shout out to Andrew Schlecht for making me watch one of the more interesting weeks of Oklahoma City basketball. And I'm now convinced that Teo Maledon and Alexei Pokushevsky, I think I'm just going to start calling them Double Dragon, because that combo is going to be insane. They are just going to be so much fun. And there's going to be turnovers galore, but it is going to be a highlight reel every single night, of good and bad, but it's going to be amazing.
For those who can't, none of you can see this, but Dave just gave Mo a stress headache just from talking about those two guys. So I think Mo's,
it started with the nickname. Yeah. It started with the nickname.
Do they have like wrestler jackets for it?
Maybe. We'll see. Let me talk to Schlecht. I'll see what we can work out. Now, the Double Dragon name was originally for the Dragic brothers, but, you know, since Zoran doesn't play here anymore, the name has moved on. It's like the Midnight Express. It just goes to whoever's there at the time. Whoever shows up, if you brought your gear, you're the Midnight Express now. These two guys are Double Dragon.
I'm done.
That's
going to
do it for
show.
This week, folks. Don't forget, hey, go check out the Daily Ding. We've been killing it over there all week. What's up, Seth?
We didn't talk about wrestling at all. It's WrestleMania week.
It is WrestleMania.
And that's not Mo, this podcast. Lucky. That's not this podcast. End the show, Dave.
We're going Tony Schiavone style. We're running out of time. We got to go.